Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
A lot of baseball, a lot of Yankees. Let's get to the Mets for a second, though, because as you just heard there, from the former program director, the man who hired me for this job, so you have him to thank for that, Met fans, as you're about to get, as you're about to get mad at him, just remember, he brought you me. But the great Spike Eskin out in Philadelphia doing his sports radio thing suggested. Now I'm trying to find the, of course, as I'm doing it, the standings isn't here on the thing. But that the Met home road split has been dramatic this year. There's no doubt about that. The home split has been dramatic. And obviously from Philadelphia, as the Phillies are holding on to a one-game lead over the Mets in the division, the idea, without saying that the Mets are cheating, speculating that something is going on out at Citi Field. As the Mets, I got him right now, thank you. As the Mets are having one of the better seasons at home. Now, here's the thing. Philadelphia is far better at home than they are on the road as well. There's a lot of teams that have typically been that is very common. The Atlanta Braves are far better at home. But the Mets record at home right now is 33-14. And that is the most wins of any team, tied with the Dodgers, who are 33-17 at home. The Mets do have the best record at home in all of baseball. And on the road, they are 19-25. So they are 6 games under 500 on the road, and they have been incredibly good. Now, if you watch the team, now obviously, I don't think there's any reason to suspect cheating. But if you watch the team, they have gone through their best stretches on some homestands. Like, they've played very well. It's been one of the better, like, it's just been a sense of Citi Field being the place to be for a lot of the year. It's been a big vibe. I mean, obviously, last year with Grisham and everything. Grissom. Wow, I'm losing it here at 4:07 in the morning.
Iglesias?
No.
Grimace.
I knew. I'm thinking Trent Grisham. I knew I was saying it wrong.
Well, Trent Grisham might be looking for a job.
Trent Grisham. Listen, there's a Beatty for Trent Grisham conversation, I'm sure. Grimace and OMG and everything else, that ridiculous concert that he put on after the Astros game last year, which is, it's always fun. We're going to miss that at the Home Run Derby, because there's nothing like watching Pete Alonso clap out of rhythm to OMG. I'm going to miss him at the Home Run Derby. I can't believe Pete's not doing the Home Run Derby. How is that possible? The guy loves it more than anything. Like, I just saw a video. It's awesome. If you haven't seen it, go on Twitter. Cal Raleigh. There's a video of him at 8 years old that they put out, jumping up and down, having fun in the backyard, talking about winning the Home Run Derby. He's talking about, I won the Home Run Derby. Like, that's great. That 8-year-old Kyle Raleigh loved the idea of winning the Home Run Derby. Pales in comparison to how much Pete Alonso loves the Home Run Derby.
I was going to say, 8-year-old Kyle Raleigh's got nothing on 29-year-old Pete Alonso.
Nothing. Nobody loves the home. What is Pete doing? Pete, don't do this to yourself. Don't do it because you think it's what's expected of you. Don't do it because you're afraid that it's become a distraction or that people mock you for it. You love it. Don't give up on what you love, Pete. Come back and do the Home Run Derby. We love watching it. You love doing it. You do. There's just enough awkward weirdness from you that we all can't get enough of. You're getting pumped up in between. You're down. You know. You're celebrating in the hallways of the building. You look like, you know, Kurt Russell in Miracle after he beat the Russians. I love everything about it from you, Pete. I love everything about it. Reconsider. Come back to the Home Run Derby, Pete. We need you. But the idea that the Mets are cheating. Now, you know what? Someone called me the other day, I think it was Saturday, and talked about how well the Tigers have done since adding Hinch. And how all of these young prospects for the Tigers who have failed for years are suddenly having the best seasons of, you know, Torkelson. You know, Green was coming on at the end of last year, but he's having an all-star season. Gleyber Torres, Gleyber Torres was this good for the Yankees in the second half and into the playoffs, and maybe he just found himself, or, you know, maybe the noise is a little bit less in Detroit, and he's enjoying that, plus the beard. He's growing a full-blown beard. So there's been speculation of Detroit. Listen, this is always going to happen now. And, you know, Spike is looking to cause a stir out in Philadelphia. But there is something to the idea, in all seriousness. The Mets have played really well at Citi Field. Now, the downturn actually ironically started with a three-game sweep at the hands of Tampa Bay on Father's Day. If you go back, I mean, think of how good they would be if they played well in that series. They were awful and got swept on Father's Day in that set against Tampa Bay. But they have played really well at Citi Field. I don't think it's cheating, unless there are secret messages in My Girl. I really don't know. Could be possible. But that's a typical thing. You want to play 500 on the road and play really well at home. That's typically what you want to do. That's been the old cliche of baseball. Play around 500 on the road and figure out a way to be really good at home. And that's kind of what, for example, the Houston Astros, who have gone on a tear as of late, just got done sweeping the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're 23-21 on the road and 32-15 at home. The Philadelphia Phillies, Spike would know very well, they are 23-22 on the road and 30-16 at home. This is not unusual. This is not unusual for good teams. They play 500 on the road, dominating their building. The problem with the Mets is they've been bad on the road in six games under 500. And to me, looking at this Met team, that's more of the issue. They need to find a way to play better on the road. But there's no doubt, Citi Field, after the owner questioned the fan base, and after the owner, you know, kind of was critical of how the fan base wasn't there and the stands weren't full for a pennant race at the end of last year, they have done a great job of filling the building, and the atmosphere in that building was great. It was great over the weekend for the Subway Series. And the Mets have had the best home field advantage in the sport. And that's kind of been who they are. Like, if you look at this Met team, it's one of the defining characteristics of this team. The defining characteristics of this team right now have been the starting rotation and making an incredible, you know, the best rotation in baseball out of, you know, paper mache and duct tape. And now it's starting to fall apart as they're waiting to get their guys back. Not hitting with runners in scoring position. Diaz at the end of the game. And being really good at home. Those have kind of been the defining characteristics of this Met team. They've got to find a way to be better on the road. But I don't think they're cheating, but we can look at it more clearly. I mean, listen, last year or 2 years ago, Scherzer tried to cheat with the stickum on his hands. We all know that. They're not above it, that's for sure. Carlos Beltran was a huge part. I believe he's still with the organization. And listen, you go back to Carlos Beltran, he's been accused. We all know what happened. He cost him the Met job with what happened with the Astros. He also then the next year joined the New York Yankees, or 2019, joined the New York Yankees. And remember, Alex Cora made some comments during the London series about how much more buttoned up the Yankees are and how important Carlos Beltran is and what a great hire that was. And we're going to have to do things to catch up to the Yankees. Remember those comments? So, listen, Carlos Beltran has been no stranger to a little bit of speculation of cheating. It's cost him a job, and even after that, there were some thoughts that he was doing it for the Yankees. 888-808-1019. Are the Mets cheating at home? I think not, but they've played extremely well there. They have played extremely well there. They took two out of three. And really, listen, all that matters with the Mets right now is what they do moving forward, how they attack this trade deadline. They do need a center fielder. They do have pieces coming back, which Lindor uttered the devastating line that Yankee fans can't stand. Getting Manaea and Senga back at the will feel like two trades made at the deadline, which is blat. You're not allowed to say that as a Yankee. But obviously, they are coming back, and that would give them a rotation you feel a lot better about. Peterson coming off a good start against Milwaukee makes you feel a little bit better about his previous two. Clay Holmes has been steady the whole year. You are concerned about his innings, but he's been steady the entire season. And Montas has had one average start. The Yankee start wasn't terrible, and he got a big lead, so he's throwing, and he does throw strikes, and he was upwards of 98 miles an hour. One really bad one really good one so-so one, but as a fifth starter, you feel okay with him as long as Manaea comes back. And that's really the wild card, because Sang has proven he can come back from injury and pitch as long as he's healthy. And he was pitching to an under 2 ERA this season. Manaea is the guy where last year kind of is the outlier of the last 4 years of his career. And you got to see if he can come back and be that same guy. But they're getting help with that. They do need bullpen help, as so does almost every team in baseball. And clearly, they could use one more bat, preferably a center fielder. 888-808-1019. But keep up. Whatever you're doing at home, it's working. Whatever you're doing at Citi Field, fellas, keep doing it. It's a working. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Allie in Toms River. What's up, Allie?
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Still over here. Good. Hey, yeah, so I pretty much agree with what you were saying, about Dominguez there. He's almost a liability, but not with his bat. You know, we need his bat, but yeah. Where do we put him? If he was in left field when Soto hit that ball and Bellinger made that great catch in the double play, Dominguez would have never been able to do that.
100%. I am in firm belief, and again, this is why I have a problem. Like, and this is the little bit of the Yankee shill and Aaron Boone defender poking out of me. I hated the lineup when Jason Dominguez wasn't in it. I hated it. I tweeted about it. I'm normally not a guy who complains about lineups, but Dominguez has been their best hitter, and off a 6-game losing streak, I could not understand why Dominguez wasn't in the lineup. Having said that, we talk about results. We get mad whenever the Yankees talk about process and their belief system and their structure. We get mad and say, who gives a damn, Cash? It's about results. And the fact of the matter was, no matter what the thought process was for that lineup, I firmly believe if Dominguez is in left field, the Yankees lose the game. So, like, it's part of it. His defense, while not being a disaster that we were afraid of in spring training and dropping fly balls, he's been much better than that. Watch him play line drives coming in. He's not good. Line drives right at him. Which is a problem for a lot of outfielders, but he really struggles with that. And then even balls in the gap, his relay, his throws to the cutoff man aren't very good. And
he's lobbing it in there. He's got to fire it in.
And that doesn't change center field to left field. That's where I have a problem with people talking about this. He would be a terrible center fielder. Don't give me he'd be more comfortable there. He's not a good outfielder.
Right. No. Compare him to Grisham. It's no comparison.
No.
He had a little bobble, but that does happen to everybody.
Yes.
It does happen to everybody. But when it's a consistent, bad throws, misjudges, can't catch a ball on the fly. Yeah. It's scary out there. Defense wins championships. Offense wins games. Defense wins championships.
Look at you. I like it.
Yeah. So I got one more thing for you.
Sure. Please go ahead.
I deliver newspapers. I got a New York Post here.
Yes.
And on the back, there's a big Yankee symbol.
Yes.
Big Yankee symbol. It says, help wanted, seeking candidates for multiple starting pitchers, multiple relief pitchers, capable third baseman, righty hitting outfielder. Please contact GM Brian Cashman.
Yeah. No, I saw it.
So I thought you guys would get a kick out of that.
No, I did. I saw it. And, Brian Cashman's at work. There's no doubt. And he's looking for all that, and they need it. I talked about it. To me, there was a transition over the weekend, during the Toronto series. Heading into the Toronto series, I viewed the Yankees as a solid team, a very good team, a team that's the best in their division. arguably the best in the American League with a slumping offense. A slumping offense that has caused them to have a bad stretch of games. That's how I viewed them. They came out of Toronto, a struggling, bad baseball team with probably too many holes to fill from outside. Like, they that four-game ass-kicking from Toronto, losing Clark Schmidt and watching and confirming that Weaver is literally a problem right now, and it wasn't just a one bad outing. Like, he has struggled since coming back from injury. Williams spits the bit in the game they come back and score all those runs, and there's something about the idea of a struggling offense awakening against a divisional opponent, getting off the deck, showing fight for the first time all year. Like, even with being a top offense, they didn't come back down three runs. They haven't done it all year. So to see them show fight, to see them score runs against Toronto, to see the offense wake up, to see Judge really fully wake up and be completely out of the slump, and then to watch the starting pitching and the bullpen, which had been good while they were losing because of the offense, suddenly fall apart, those are signs of just a bad team that finds ways to lose. And then with the injury to Clark Schmidt and the blow up from Warren and the idea that after tying that game, Williams can't keep it scoreless in the eighth inning and gives up two runs, and now Weaver's a major issue, and Loaisiga can't get an out, and Leiter is probably a little overworked and tired and not pitching all that well. Like, they don't have answers in the bullpen. They're in desperate need of another starter with Luis Hill at least a month away, and it just felt like there was a clear transition. To me, a struggling team with a good offense all year that's gone into a major funk and costing them games, and they transitioned. They got their ass kicked by Springer in the Blue Jays, went into a Mets series, and found out that the bullpen's even worse than we thought, and right now they have a lot of holes. And as much as that trade deadline joke on the back of the post is whatever it is, and clearly Brian Cashman's out there scouring for help, there's not enough out there. This is going to have to be with the players we find here. And I forgot to mention Carlos Rodon proves again on Saturday he doesn't pitch well in big games. So those have to be given. You can go out and add Suarez at third. You can go out and add a lot. You cannot replace Williams and Weaver. Those guys need to be good or the Yankees are in trouble. You cannot have Rodon not be able to pitch in any kind of big game. You can't replace him. He's too important. He needs to be better or the Yankees aren't going to be good enough. Like, there are things that have to just turn around internally. That's still possible to me. I don't think that it's out of the realm that you could still get a very good Williams and Weaver. I don't think it's crazy to think that Rodon could pitch. I have no confidence in it, but he's a talented enough pitcher having a good enough year to pitch well in the postseason. And those are things that, especially the Rodon thing, those are things that are tough to rely on, but the Yankees have to.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
But Brian Cashman can do all he wants. Those are certain things that just have to be answered from within. And now this is a very important stretch starting tonight in against Seattle, against two really good teams heading into the All-Star game. As we watched last night, the Toronto Blue Jays win their ninth game in a row. They're playing the White Sox and the A's leading into the All-Star break for them, and the Yankees are playing Seattle and Chicago. These are important games for the New York Yankees starting tonight. 888-808-1019. Quick break. More of your calls next. We're taking you all the way to 6. Still got me for an hour and a half as we take it to the morning show instead of the warm-up show here on a Tuesday morning. 888-808-1019. Back after this. Talking a lot of baseball. Obviously, tonight, big game for the New York Yankees against Seattle. to start the series. Again, a big six-game stretch leading into a trade deadline that's going to be enormous for them. The Mets will take on the Orioles in Baltimore. I think young Fliegelman is on his left yesterday. He's going to Baltimore, going to go to some of these games. You got Holmes versus Young and his 0-3 and 7.02 ERA, but Clay Holmes still under 3 with 2.99. Tonight, the Yankees will throw Will Warren, who was obviously atrocious in his last start, against the Seattle Mariners, against Gilbert, who is 2-2, hasn't pitched much this year, was injured, but is pitching to a 3.4 ERA. Yankees are familiar with him. He's a very good young pitcher. And the Seattle Mariners team that is 48-42 and just coming off not giving up a run in a three-game set against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Huge games for the New York Yankees, obviously. There's just no way around it as we talk about, you know, Toronto. And although I still think the Blue Jays are frauds, and I got to be totally honest with you. I'm sorry. I do. I think they're frauds. I've been saying this for a while. I can't get off it now. I know they're 3.5 games up. They've won 9 games in a row. Frauds are only frauds if they make you believe. And right now, I'm sure there's a lot of belief. Obviously, the whole thing with the broadcasters and the broom and Michael Kay and all that nonsense. But I'm not, like, right now they're playing, and this is what makes these games important, because although they're frauds, you can't let even frauds jump out to a 6-7 game lead. And right now it's 3.5, and they're playing the White Sox and the A's, and the Yankees are playing the Mariners, who are 48-42, and then turn to the Cubs, who are the highest scoring team in baseball and leading their, you know, division and having a great year. So these are really important games into the All-Star break, which the Yankees desperately need. And they need to get answers right now. Like, they need Will Warren to be the guy who has been the best rookie pitcher in baseball, arguably. I mean, he leads all rookie starters with strikeouts, and he actually leads all pitchers in baseball with caught-looking strikeouts. So he needs to be that guy. He needs to be the guy who, against the A's, found a way to get through after a shaky first inning, loading the bases, and not the guy who let it implode all over the place against the Toronto Blue Jays, who, again, Springer is an incredible player. Vladimir Guerrero is very good. They're pitching really well now in this stretch, but it's not too long ago that they were really struggling. And I just, right now, their schedule is easy these last couple games. The Yankees' schedule does get easier in August, and we know they're not going to sell. And so it's not about selling necessarily or falling so far behind that the Yankees won't chase it. They have no choice. The Yankees are not selling. The Yankees are buying. And there's no level where the Yankees won't buy. The Yankees have no choice in this Judge era right now. With Judge being 33 years old this season, having the season he's having in the American League and the way it looks right now, they are chasing this division. But you can't let the Blue Jays pull too far ahead. You just can't. And it opens up. It's just as tough when the Yankees get back from the All-Star break. But these at home, coming off of a win, coming off of another losing streak, they have got to play better. And quite honestly, and you know how I think some of the narrative around Aaron Boone and around the club's atmosphere and what they accept and all this stuff, I think it's completely overblown. But there is a sense of urgency that needs to be placed on these games. And I'm looking to, like, show that urgency by how they handle things. And I'm very curious to see if they're willing to do different things with Jazz. Are they willing to make that move? Because that one, I've talked about a lot over the last couple of days. And so has everybody, not just me, obviously. But I have never been more stunned at the stubbornness of the New York Yankees. And I know many fans have been over the last couple of years. And especially now that he's got a sore shoulder and the throws have been a problem for him. And who knows? He still might have a problem throwing from second base if the shoulder's sore. He had a problem throwing to DJ LeMahieu at second base from 15 feet away in the Mets series. Almost threw the ball away, and thankfully Mauricio decided to get up and start running for third and got tagged out. But that needs to change. And I would like to understand the move and why they're doing what they're doing. But this series is important. And you're only going to see Fried once. He just pitched on Sunday. So theoretically, you could have him for, right? He's going to probably pitch on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And that's it. You're going to get the one pitcher you trust before the All-Star break. You can get him for one of these six starts. That's it. You're going to see Will Warren twice. Like, this is an important stretch against really good teams. And for me, like, this is where the offense needs to wake up. And they've been waking up. They've been performing much better. They scored runs against the Blue Jays. They've scored runs against the Mets. This is a moment where the offense, after being terrible, terrible for two straight weeks, and having the pitching keeping them in every game, and the starting pitching being excellent, this offense, Aaron Judge and company, need to recognize that the pitching is floundering right now. They've lost Clark Schmidt in the rotation. They're going to have Schlittler make his major league debut coming up. The bullpen is in shambles. Like, this, the offense needs to score some runs in these three games. And they're doing it against a very tough pitching staff and a very tough pitcher in Gilbert to start this series. So this is an important spot for the New York Yankees. And then the New York Mets go to Baltimore. Hopefully they've stemmed the tide here. You feel a little bit better about them for two different reasons. One, the offense has woken up here a little bit. They beat the hell out of the Yankees on Saturday with 12 runs. They've scored a bunch of runs. They fought back after being down 5-0 on the Sunday game against Max Fried, put together a lot of good at-bats, and were one swing away from, you know, Juan Soto or Pete Alonso from taking the lead in that game, and actually did rally where it took the Yankees making an incredible defensive play from Bellinger. Otherwise, they probably do come back and win that game. They get the big home run from McNeil on the Friday night. They score runs against the phenom from the Brewers in the second game of the doubleheader. So they've won some games, and the rotation that's been a major problem for them is within a week here, and they're getting to the All-Star break, obviously. Is within a week going to come back to Manaea and Senga. So you feel like you're getting some answers in the rotation. The offense is waking up, and even feel better about Reed Garrett, who on Friday, 4th of July, gave you two really good innings. So you're starting to feel better about the bullpen, answers coming in the rotation, and the offense has woken up a little bit over the last two series. They are one game behind Philadelphia. And you got to look to make hay against the lousy Orioles team, even though you're going into their building. But this is a good pitching matchup for the Mets tonight with Holmes versus Young. And you're looking to start the series with a win. Six more games heading into the All-Star break. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Teddy in Yonkers. What's up, Teddy?
Hey, CM. I'm glad I'm not getting disconnected again tonight, like I did the last time I spoke to you Saturday. I waited over an hour, and then you said hello, and I got disconnected.
Yeah, I vaguely remember you just had a terrible line. As soon as I took you, it was too much noise, buddy. I'm sorry. You sound great tonight, though, so let's talk.
Right. See, that old expression, was it Bill Parcells who said it?
You are what your record says you are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Toronto is a good team, and I feel, that they're going to be in there for the rest of the year. They hit, they pitch, and I don't know why you could say that they're a fraud. They're not, in my opinion.
They have been, this group with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bichette and even Springer last year, they have been frauds. That's why. This group has been frauds. They were supposed to be this great young offensive lineup with all these, you know, the second generation superstars, and they were going to beat the Yankees for all these years, and Vlad's like, I'll never play for the Yankees. I enjoy beating them too much. And then they would win, get to the playoffs, and they've yet to win a playoff game. They get swept in every playoff series that they enter into over the last 5 or 6 years. So, and then they always find a way to not be able to pitch. This team they're playing well right now, but until they prove otherwise, they have been frauds, this group. Now, this year's team might be different. We'll see. And I don't want to fall behind them, even if I think they're frauds. I don't want to fall behind them 5-6 games here. So this is an important week while they're playing terrible baseball teams and they're playing good at the moment. But why do I think they're frauds? Because that's what they've been.
Well, they swept the Yankees in a four-game series.
They certainly did. Kicked the crap out of them. Yep.
For the first time since, I think, 2016. I'm not sure. But, hey, you got to give something to look into something like that. They swept the Yankees.
Absolutely.
Four games. And to me,
kicked the crap out of them. I know. I agree. It does say something. But I'm just like, if they play Toronto again in Toronto at the end of the month, if the Yankees win all those three games, are you going to say that it means something, or is it just like it always means something when it happens to the Yankees? When the Yankees do it, we don't really seem to think it means anything.
I'll do a mea culpa if that happens.
We'll see.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating.
No doubt. And they didn't just lose. They didn't just lose to Toronto. Toronto kicked the crap out of them every which way.
I know. Quick question. Does LeMahieu come back next year?
I'm pretty sure he is. I think he's under contract for one more season. I doubt they would bring him back next year. There are reports that he was going to get cut last year, but
right.
Judge and some of the other veterans went to the ownership and went to the group Cash and told him not to do it. He does have next year under contract for $15 million. I would think they eat it unless he has a great second half here, but I'm assuming they're going to make a move at the deadline and he's not going to play all that much. So I think there's a chance he's not on the team by the end of this year.
Is Cashman going to go try to get a starting pitcher?
Yes, he's going to try. I just don't know if that's. I don't know the level of importance on the starter. I mean, they have Luis Hill coming back. I heard Michael Kay say late August, September. I don't know how that timeline works. He doesn't have that much time once they start his rehab assignment, and they've talked about starting his rehab assignment in a week. He doesn't have 2 months. Like, they don't give you that long a time. So he's got to be back before then. If he's back by August, even like August 7th or something, and he has a full 2 months of starts, then I feel better about him into the postseason. If it's just September, then I'm really concerned about him making starts into the postseason. But if he gets August, I feel like you can live with him making a start, and he was Rookie of the Year last year. We got to see what he's got. He's got good stuff. See how he comes back. But, you know, I think how Brian Cashman treats these. He's going to make whatever deal he feels that makes most sense. So I think he's looking for relief pitching, and he's looking for starters. And I think he'll tell himself, look, if I get a legitimate starter here, then I could possibly put Luis Hill in the bullpen and add the arm there. I think it's whatever fleshes out here in this trade deadline is what he's going to do. I think it's part of the reason DJ's at second and Jazz is at third, because he doesn't know what is going to be presented to him as available at the trade deadline. He needs someone who's got some, games under his belt at third base. I think that's exactly why he's part of the reason he's playing third. But it needs to end for me. But I would think Cash is out there looking for anything and everything, and he'll adjust. If he gets a third baseman, great, back to Jazz. If he gets a middle infielder and feels like they're better at second base, then he'll keep Jazz at third and play that person at second. If he gets a starter, he'll probably end up moving Luis Hill to the bullpen. If he gets bullpen helps, then he's going to try and make Luis Hill a starter. And look, Will Warren is capable.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall is back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
They're going to have to find a way to get four starters into a postseason. But again, you look at these other teams, like, if they play certain teams in the postseason, they don't have great fourth starters. The offense is going to have to carry them. Scotty in Montclair. What's up, Scotty?
Good morning, C-Mac.
Good morning.
Will the real Mark Vientos please stand up?
Yeah, it's been disappointing for Vientos. I still think I need to play him.
That's
and find
an
out who he is. Yeah, I mean, he's been extremely disappointing this year. And
on
even
both sides, he's been horrible at third also.
Yeah.
Besides that he's not hitting.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd want to see Baby in the lineup, but Vientos has been awful.
No, he has. And Beatty at least is a much more solid defender.
Right.
I still want to. I've seen Vientos be great, though. I've yet to see Beatty
yeah,
be
I've
great.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I know, but I feel like I got to give him a chance to get back there. I feel like I still want him to.
He seems to have had a chance. And Mauricio has to learn how to run the bases. But I don't know. After that last Goldschmidt play,
yeah.
He was just standing there and could have walked back.
No, I know. He gets off a second base and tagged out. Then he just allows the unassisted double play.
At first base?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And one more thing. When is the last time, and I like Tyrone Taylor, when's the last time he got a hit?
No, he's been terrible. He's been bad offensively for about a month.
Ago?
Yeah. No, he's been bad for about a month offensively. There's no doubt. He's a fourth outfielder. They need an. He can't be a guy who's your starting center fielder every day. It's just, he did a great job last year. It's not someone you can rely on. They have to go out, and whether it's, you know, Siri, who's still a ways away, or whatever the case may be, go out and make a move at the deadline. You need a better starting center fielder. They need the bat. The bottom of the lineup has been terrible. You mentioned two guys who really hurt them in Vientos and Taylor. There's no doubt. The entire bottom of the order has not been good enough for a while now. And Vientos, again, it's one of those weird things, right, where you want to play guys who deserve to play, and if Beatty's playing well, you want to give him at-bats. But to me, and I said this when he came back, and he's been terrible since he's come back from injury. I've seen with my eyes Vientos carry the team. I've seen Vientos be a young, budding superstar. I've seen him perform in the biggest moments against Philadelphia, against the Dodgers. I've seen him play well in the playoffs. I feel like it depends on where the Mets are. Like, right now, they're one game back. They're comfortably, you know, they're in a playoff position. I'm willing to let it ride with Vientos for a while to see if I can find that guy. Because if it's about winning championships, right, if that's what it's about, then I need Vientos to be at his best, and I got to be willing to give it a chance. Same thing, I feel the same way about the Yankees with Giancarlo Stanton. Right now, he's hurting them. Right now, Giancarlo Stanton, with his inability to play anything else, his inability to run, the way he's swinging the bat right now and the amount of strikeouts, Giancarlo Stanton is killing the Yankees. There's no doubt. The best lineup that the Yankees can present doesn't have Giancarlo Stanton in it. But the rub is, can they win a championship without Giancarlo Stanton being a threat in the postseason? I don't know. And the only way to make him a threat is to play him. He's got to play so he can be a threat come postseason time. I have to take that chance. Because as much as it's hurting them now, look, if they fall far behind enough and they're out of a playoff spot, it's like, oh, man, what are they going to, you know, they need to win games right now just to get in, then that's a different conversation. But as long as this team picks it up a little bit, and I think they will, and they'll get additions at the trade deadline, this team is a playoff team. I'm still pretty bullish on them winning the division. But can they win a championship? Can they beat the Tigers? Can they beat the Astros? Can they beat whoever is presented to them in the World Series if they're lucky enough to get there? Can they do that without Giancarlo Stanton being the threat he's been in every postseason since 2020? I don't know. So, if it's about winning championships, I got to play him. I got to keep him in the lineup. I got to have him find his swing, because that's how they're at their best, is when he is an enormous threat and protection for Judge. You got to find that. And even though they're struggling, even though they're 3.5 games back, even though that they have blown this lead and they have played terrible baseball for 3 weeks, and that the best lineup probably has Rice in it over him and more flexibility by putting guys in different spots, that makes a lot of sense to me. But at the same time, what else makes sense to me is I've watched Stanton hit monster shots. And the same thing with Vientos. I saw Vientos hit clutch home run after clutch home run. And as bad as it's been, and he doesn't have the track record necessarily that Stanton has, if I'm looking at how I can make my team the best to win a championship, because now the Mets are in the same boat as the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Phillies, everyone else, it's about winning a World Series, nothing else. Are the Mets and this lineup good enough to win a championship with, hey, well, at least Beatty plays third base better? I know he's not going to be nearly the force Vientos was, but at least I'm confident he'll play third. Is that good enough to win a championship? Because to me, the Mets are at their best when this kid's great. And that's what he was last year, and you got to find that. Phil in Sheepshead Bay. What's up, Phil?
Yeah, hi, C-Mac. C-Mac, you know about the Syracuse shuttle, right? The Mets use that.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have used
it. In and out. You never know who's going to be good, who's going to be up there and turn into the other team into batting practice. I'm just suggesting one thing. If you get a couple of guys at the trading deadline, even one, that's consistent, that can help Diaz, I think it's good. I'm going to let you make a decision on that like I did. Maybe two guys. And that's it for me for today. Have a nice evening.
Oh, well, that's it for you. Thank you, Phil. I appreciate it. Nice and brief. Yeah, listen, they need bullpen help. I totally agree. The bullpen, because of the state of the rotation, the amount of innings they've had to throw, their bullpen has really had a tough go of it. It was really nice to see, not for me so much, but for the Met fans, it was really nice to see Reed Garrett have that two-inning game on Friday against the Yankees. They were in desperate need of that. He's been awful for them after being so important to them the first, 80 games of the year. And obviously, Brazoban is another one who's having a great start to his season. Now he's having trouble throwing strikes. Like, their bullpen outside of Diaz is in trouble. There's no doubt about it. Buteau has not been the weapon he was when they moved him to the bullpen last year. Stanek has, been up and down. They have signed Raley again, so hopefully he's coming back relatively soon. Add another lefty to the pen. Come the trade deadline, you're looking to add. To me, there's two real needs for the Mets. You can talk about the rotation just to get another guy in here for depth, because they've been dealing with injuries and they don't really have an answer for a spot start, and they like to give guys extra days. So you can add a back end of the rotation depth guy, do another, Mets pitching lab, find diamond in the rough type deal. But I don't think they would go for a major significant starter. I think you're looking for an impact, where real impact players are center field and in the bullpen. That's what you're looking for. So, yeah, one or two, absolutely. And again, the only issue I have with the Mets trading is that I really feel like, now, there's depth inside the organization. There's guys at A-ball and double A as far as arms go that you could let go. But, and they're not going to trade some of their top guys, Sproat's not. But, my only issue, with the Mets is you can't, for impact, major, major impact, you're not going to trade pitching prospects. Because the way they handle the rotation, you need to build your rotation from within. If you're not going to go spend money on it, there's only so many Griffin Cannings you can go find and so many Frankie Montas' careers you're going to resurrect. It's not easy. And if you don't want to spend money on free agents because you don't believe in long contracts for 30-year-old starters, makes sense, but where do you get top-level talent? So, how do you trade any of these pitching prospects that you have real belief in for anything when, unless it's going to be for young, controllable starting pitching? Otherwise, how do you do it? That's how you're going to build the future of your rotation, is through these kids are going to be relied upon because you don't want to spend money in the rotation. So you feel like you got to do it strictly from the position player pool. But there's no doubt, I don't think they need massive changes. They need a couple of legitimate bullpen arms. They do have the closer. Unlike the Yankees, where the ninth inning is up for grabs, you feel very confident about the ninth inning with the New York Mets. You just need a couple of arms to kind of get you through. You're hoping you're seeing, Reed Garrett turn it around. Add a couple of arms to that and get a center fielder, and you feel like that's about all the Mets need. The Yankees have a lot more needs right now. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Spencer real quick in East Windsor. What's up, Spencer?
Hey, good morning, Chris. To what you were saying before, I would rather the Blue Jays get hot right now and go on a 9-game winning streak in July than for them to go on a 9-game winning streak in September. I'm hoping that, with this last week, if the Yankees can win 2 out of 3 against Seattle, if they can win 2 out of 3 against Chicago, I'll feel okay about the team.
I hate to say this because it's a little bit defeatist for a Yankee fan. I would sign for 3-3 right now.
Yeah, well, 3-3 I think is reasonable.
I think you have to sign for 3-3.
We're still in July. On the issue of Jazz and DJ, I totally acknowledge that. They're playing out of position right now. But looking in the totality of the Yankees and their state right now, I don't think that that is really like a first order of business that has to be taken care of. Just a disclosure, I'm visually impaired. I'm not actually seeing the games. I'm primarily listening to them.
Okay.
So I haven't like heard on any of the games, you know, the Yankees have lost because of a throw by Jazz Chisholm or because of an error by DJ. But, you know, their positions, it's not as a disparity as like putting Chuck Knobloch or IKF into left field. You know, I don't think it's really on, I don't think it's on that order. It would be great if they could get it solved, but I think they have other issues that have to be taken care of first.
Well, thank you for the call, Spencer. They have lost. Not like a direct, it's not like Jazz throws the ball away, the game-winning run scores, but necessarily, but they clearly have been impacted by the defense both at second base and third base. Now, there's been some numbers that DJ, you know, there's a guy who does a great job, Yankee Files, who's a positive Yankee fan like me, believe it or not. There are some of us who actually do exist. It's not just, it's pretty much me and him. That's it. Me and that podcast. They do a good job. But he put out some numbers about DJ's defense at second base not being as bad as people say. Defensive numbers are, for me, tough. I watch the games. When I'm all up for numbers. I think they're important in baseball, obviously. Defensive numbers are the ones I look at least. And I'm sorry, DJ can't move. So it's made an impact on the amount of runs they've given up. And the look at the numbers for Leiter and the defense that's played behind him. Like, they have guys, they have some swing and miss, and Leiter does get swing and miss. But Loaisiga gets weak contact. Leiter puts the ball on the ground. You need good defense like that. They have hurt them. This defensive shift and what they've done with Jazz and DJ has hurt them. I don't remember off the top of my head like the definitive play that lost them a game. I'm sure if you gave me 10 minutes, I could think of it. But it's also 4:55 in the morning, and with my kids' summer schedule, I don't sleep. But there have been plenty of instances where it's hurt them defensively. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. Now, again, I agree with you. I don't think it's like misplaying guys all over the place. And Jazz was an excellent defender at third base last year. Whether it's the sore shoulder or whatever, he's not been that this year. And I can't just continue to watch it and say, well, he was good last year, it'll come around. No, it's been bad enough where it's time to move on, and DJ can't play second. So it's hurt them. It's a major impact for them. And it's the one of the more stubborn instances I can ever remember of not trying to fix it or do something with it. But, yeah, it's not like IKF playing the outfield. It's not like Bowers or Calhoun or, like, there's been other instances over the last couple of years where we saw it more extensively than this. It's just one position. And again, there was no reason to see this coming because last year you look at the numbers, and I know I poo-poo defensive numbers, but I remember watching the games last year. Jazz was really good at third. He made a lot of great plays. He had, in the short time he was with the Yankees, he had a +8 run differential, or, you know, runs scored differential, whatever it's called, +8. At third base, which was like top three, and he only played for half the year. So he was a great defender. This year, it's not the same. And you can't just continue to look at it and not make changes. So that has to change for me. And it's going to change at the deadline, but they can't afford to have it cost them night after night for the next month as they're chasing down the fraud Blue Jays. And again, the schedule gets tougher for them. They, you know, come out of the All-Star break and have to play. Right now, they're playing the White Sox and the A's, then they come home for the Giants and the Yankees. Hopefully the Yankees can exact a little bit of revenge. Then they play a four-game series against the Tigers, who are the best team in the American League. Then they play a four-game series with a doubleheader against the Orioles, home against Kansas City. Then they're out for the Rockies and Dodgers, then the Cubs and Rangers. So it starts to get a little bit harder for them. And again, let me see the Blue Jays bring it home all year long. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We're coming back after this. I'm not done. I got you for one more hour all the way to 6 o'clock in the morning show right here on The Fan.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.